So today I'm going to talk to you about a community health status assessment that was done in the Pacific Northwest. It is the largest public-private group of people that came together to do a community health status assessment that we could find. So this is the group is called the Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative. It crosses state lines, so we have representation from Oregon and Washington. We've got Clark County, Clackamas County, Multnomah, and Washington. We have two CCOs, and all the nonprofit hospitals you see there, Providence, Kaiser, Tuolity, OHSU, Adventist Health, all at the table to do a community health status assessment. This process started in about 5 years ago, and what I'm going to present to you today is the second round of the EPI portion of the assessment. So the Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative did a modified MAP model, and as you all know very well, there are many, many components, community involvement, focus groups, strengths and weaknesses assessments. Today, I am only talking to you about the quantitative portion of the health status assessment. So I want you to know that this is the EPI portion. There's a lot of other input that was combined for the final product, but this is how we did the EPI portion. When we did this assessment the first round, we had to figure out how does an indicator make it into the assessment. And when I say the word indicator, I mean point estimate for a value. For example, it could be percentage of adults with fruit and vegetable consumption, or age-adjusted death rate due to suicide, or any piece of data. So in order for an indicator to make it in for consideration, one, we had to have data for all four counties. So remember, we're crossing state lines here, so we have to have available in Washington State and Oregon State at the county level. Can the indicator be run through the matrix? I'll explain that in a moment. Was the indicator recommended to us by a subject matter expert? So as part of this process, all the epidemiologists reached out to every person in our health department with area of expertise. So we reached out to our sexually transmitted disease folks, our chronic disease folks, our tobacco folks, and said, if you were going to have your entire program represented by three indicators, what would they be? And we took all of that for all the county health departments across the states. Last time we completed this health assessment, we also did a gap analysis. So we received feedback from community members, from hospitals, from the CCOs, of what was missing in our assessment. So another consideration was this indicator listed on our gap analysis as something that was missing last time? If it was, it automatically got in. And also, did we consider this indicator on our last assessment? If that was the case, it also automatically was included. So this is how the decision was made for whether or not an indicator was included in this assessment. Okay, so now that we had a little over 375 indicators at this point, we needed to score them. These are the six criteria we used to score each indicator. I will go over what this means in detail. The worst possible score an indicator could receive is 6 out of 6. That would be the worst possible score. The best possible score would be 0 out of 6. So we looked at disparity by race or ethnicity, disparity by sex, trend, the relative comparison of the point estimate at the county level to the state, the magnitude of the population that was affected by this particular health issue, and the severity of the health issue. So these were the six things we considered for every single indicator, and they were all scored. So, first of all, disparity, everything through an equity lens. And when we say, is there a significant disparity by race, ethnicity, or sex, I mean a statistically significant disparity, and by that it could be a p-value less than 0.5, non-overlapping confidence intervals, or chi-square test, or regression analysis. So we compared the incidence rates of a particular health indicator, and if there was a significant disparity, that indicator received a 1, and if there wasn't, it received a 0. The reference populations for race was white, non-Hispanic for ethnicity, and male for sex. Now, that does not mean if the burden of disease fell upon the reference population, it doesn't count as a disparity. So, for example, if males had the higher rates of suicide over female, it would still count as a disparity. So if there was any disparity, any way you looked at it, you received a 1. The indicator received a 1. trend. What is the pattern of the trend over the last 5 to 10 years? Again, we're dealing with probably 35 different data sources here. So sometimes we had 5 years available, sometimes we had 10. We did a chi-square test for trend. If the trend was getting better, the indicator received a 0. If it was getting worse, it received a 1. And if there was no change over the last 5 or 10 years, it received a 0.5. Comparison to the state. So when you look at the county level point estimate and compare it to the state, where is the disease burden? So 0 if the county's better, 1 if the county's worse, and 0.5 it's the same. Now I'll go into limitations in a little bit, but one of the big limitations of looking at it this way was, for example, in suicide, Oregon is 8th worst in the country. So if my county is better than the state, I'm going to receive a 0. But if you looked at it at a national scale, my suicide rate is astronomically high. So the reason why we chose to do state value versus national value is we didn't have national level point estimates for the majority of our indicators. So we chose to compare to the state because we did have those. Magnitude. So is a large part of the population affected by this health outcome or burden of disease? So behavioral indicators, so I'm talking BRFIS, healthy teens, the youth surveys. If the prevalence is greater than 10% of the at-risk population, so if we're talking about exercise in adults, an indicator would receive a 1 if greater than 10% of adults were not exercising the proper amount, according to the CDC. For mortality and cancer incidence, we looked at the incidence rate. If you're a top 10 leading cause of death or a top 10 cancer incidence, you automatically received a 1. For other indicators that weren't survey data, that was not mortality or cancer incidence, if the rate was greater than 100 per 100,000 population per year, you received a 1. An example of this would be chlamydia. So our chlamydia rate is, I don't know, it's 236 per 100,000 per population. So that's an example of an indicator that would be scored as a 1. So 1 is a large population was affected by these definitions, and 0 was a large percentage of the population was not affected. Severity. This is where the epis are going to start to squirm a little bit. We sure did. What is the severity of the health issue? So if it's a morbidity or mortality indicator, a 0 means it's curable. So with proper medical treatment, you can be cured and you don't have any permanent consequences. A 0.5 would be survivable and treatable, but associated with permanent health consequences. An example of this would be female breast cancer. It is survivable and treatable, but there are permanent health consequences. And 1, immediate death are not treatable. So any of our mortality indicators, for example, would automatically be a 1. For behavioral outcomes, again, we're talking about fruit and vegetable consumption, exercise. 0 means no attendant harm with potential for more than minimum. 1 is an immediate jeopardy to health or safety. So, for example, a suicide attempt would be immediate jeopardy to health or safety. Now, there was a tremendous amount of discussion, for example. If you think about proper, let's go with fruit and vegetable consumption. So if you had to pick for severity, for not having your fruits and vegetables, would you pick a 0, a 0.5? I think everybody could probably agree no one's going to die today if they don't have their fruits and vegetables, but 0 or 0.5. Well, maybe, I don't know, perhaps I shouldn't say that, but so the behavioral outcomes when you're assigning a severity score get really, really squishy here in terms of calling it as actual harm that's not immediate versus no inherent harm. So that's one of the limitations. We went through a lot of medical literature, and we found this severity scoring, how surgeons can actually rank the severity of a procedure in terms of the risk. So that's what we've formulated this off of. This is quite interesting, actually. We were very grateful to find something to help rank severity. So what does this actually look like? So on the very left-hand side, you see, hopefully, a column that says score. This is the total score for the indicator. Remember, a 6 out of 6 is the worst possible score an indicator could receive. That would mean it has a significant disparity along race or ethnicity. It has a disparity around gender. The trend's worse, the county value's worse, high magnitude and high severity. So as you can see, for each indicator, the top one is adults with the usual source of health care. We had a disparity along ethnicity, so our Hispanic population had significantly less adults, fewer adults with a usual source of health care, so that received a 1. Our females had better health care coverage than males, so that there was a disparity there. Interestingly, we did not have a change in trend. Our county value was worse than the state, so we received a 1. I'm going across the top yellow line here. The magnitude, we had a lot of people that weren't covered and and we ranked the severity of not having a usual source of health care as 0.5. We did not do it as a 1 because a person could always automatically receive care in an emergency room. No one is denied care in an emergency room. So that access to health care, adults with a usual source of health care was received a 5 out of 6. So that's a pretty high ranking indicator. So we ended up doing this for about 270 variable indicators for each county. And then we did this. So what everybody was interested in was the regional outcomes. So we took each county, so Clackamas, Clark, Multnomah, and Washington are the county indicators. We took the score for that indicator for the county and averaged it and then ranked the regional. So as you can see, this is for our mortality indicators. Non-transport accident deaths was number 1 with a score of 5.3 out of 6. Non-transport accidents includes accidental overdoses, poisonings, and falls. Interestingly enough, this value, you can see Multnomah County, that's where Portland, Oregon is. It's a 6 out of 6. It's being driven almost exclusively by overdoses and poisonings, whereas in in Washington County, where I'm from, ours is almost driven exclusively by falls. However, because they're combined, it's a non-transport accident is number 1, and we had suicide as number 2. So this allowed us to basically give this large collaborative group a top 10 list for mortality and morbidity indicators, a behavioral top 10 list, and then they could be combined with all the other different MAP components of the assessment to help guide the regional priorities for this health status assessment. So there are a lot of limitations for this methodology, and I just want to be very clear on that. The granularity of analysis, at what level do you analyze cancer? So of course, number 1 at the top of the list, well, number 2, 1 or 2, is all age-adjusted death rate due to all cancer. Well, you can't really do an intervention for all cancer, right? That's not useful. I can't take that to this collaborative and say, go work on all cancer. That doesn't mean anything. That's not helpful. So we knocked it down one level of granularity. So we went to prostate, we went to breast, we went to uterine, we went one level. But there are 3 or 4 levels more granular than that that you can go to. So where do you make your threshold for where you count it? We took one level down. The assessment is only good as the data. Being in the Pacific Northwest, we don't have a tremendous amount of diversity in our area. Washington County was able to analyze along Hispanic, Latino, non-Hispanic, Latino lines, but we didn't have counts to analyze by race. Multnomah County, our counterparts in where Portland is, they were able to do that, which is why race and ethnicity were combined in our disparity analysis. We have very limited data on many health outcomes and behaviors. We have basically nothing on oral health. We have nothing around sexual orientation. I mean, we had a huge laundry list of people like, why aren't you looking at this? Why aren't you looking at this? It's like, well, we'd love to. We don't have the data. So just acknowledging what we don't even have. We have very little mental health data, too. We just don't have it. So we analyzed what we did have, but we are very aware that we are lacking in a lot of data for very special populations on top of that. The severity scoring, as I hinted at a little bit, is subject to considerable bias. I think the 5 EPIs were in a room for an hour and a half having a knockdown, drag-out fight about how to score chlamydia on severity. I'm not kidding. So chlamydia, everybody knows, is treatable. It's 1 pill, and you're done, right? Well, if it's not treated, there are pretty severe consequences. You can have pelvic inflammatory disease. You can have ectopic pregnancies, sterility. I mean, there are very serious consequences if it's not treated. So how do you count that? Do you count that as a 0 or a 0.5? So we did a lot of research on the indicators that we had questions on how we should rate for severity. We consulted with medical professionals, but that took a lot of time, and at the end of the day, what I might rank chlamydia, you might rank it very differently. So the severity scoring is definitely most subject to bias, certainly when you get to behavioral indicators as well. This method, although it is reproducible and translatable, so you can do the same thing, you can put a different group of epis, have the same methodology, they can repeat it. It is incredibly resource intensive. I would say 5 epis at, and these are master's or doctoral level epis, at 0.25 of their FTE for 2 years went to this project. So that's a lot. So that was a lot of information, and just know that the full methodology in detail will be coming out at the end of July in our Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative Health Status Assessment. But I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Great presentation, Jim Jellison, Public Health Informatics Institute. That severity dimension was fascinating. I'm wondering why you limited yourself to 3 points on a 0 to 100 scale, and why not introduce 0.25 or 0.75, for example?
Oh, we went there. We did. The problem was trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to define splitting between, So if we're going to split out between a 0 and a 0.5, and we have these two separations, curable and survivable, what's in between? Does it have permanent health consequences or semi-permanent health consequences? Or it's just really, really hard to split the hairs. Oh, yeah, we wanted to do like 4 sig figs worth of severity rating. I mean, you know, that's how we like to work. But we kept it to 3, which was a challenge, but it was actually more challenging to add more granularity to this and make the definitions separatable. That's a very good question. Thank you.
I'm going to give you a chance, since there's no one standing at the mic down there, to speculate on. If you're going to do this over again, what would you do different?
Did everyone hear the question? Okay. So this is the second time that we have done this process. The last time, interestingly enough, we did not have severity or magnitude in our matrix, so that was an add-on this year that was requested by our stakeholders. What would we do different? Now, interestingly, because everyone wanted a lot more data, they got it. The problem this year is nobody knows how to mixed method combine all this information. We added 6 different focus groups and those kind of quantitative data with this, and so we have very disparate priorities. So, for example, you know, when you interview the community, they don't go, you know, non-transport accident deaths, I'm seeing a lot of that. Like, just a lot. You know, nobody says that, right? They're talking about poverty. They're talking about jobs. They're talking about education. So you have the EPIs with these very technical lists of we need to work on this. You have the community with this list. Now we have hospital and CCO data on top of that. You have a cost aspect. So I would say the biggest challenge, I wouldn't change much on the EPI methods. I feel pretty it's stable about it this time. But now the big issue is how do we combine 8 different, very, very different and equally important priorities across all those different groups, stakeholders. That's the very hard part, and we haven't figured that out yet. I'm not on that work group.
That was kind of my question about how to put the next steps of getting that information out.
No. So where we're at right now, the EPIs have produced their top 10 list across behavioral, mortality, and just standard morbidity. And so we have given this to the Healthy Columbia Willamette Collaborative and said, this is what the population data say. Here you go. And then we have other work groups for hospitals. The hospitals have their top 10 data. So ER information, the CCOs have their top 10. And then we have the community work group that have their themes as well. So there is a separate work group that is looking at all of these and trying to weave a theme through them. So, for example, We know substance abuse is a very big issue in our community in the Pacific Northwest, so the community said substance abuse or mental health, so we can weave that with depression in our EPI assessment or suicide attempts or suicide. So we're finding, they're finding themes across that. So that's, they're working on that right now, and that will eventually pick the top three priorities for the region.
Great, thanks. Did the hospitals do their own assessments as well? And how did they compare?
That's an interesting question. So the hospitals do their own assessments. So yes, just like public health, the hospitals do their own assessment. This actually replaces it. So by design, we have designed the entire collaborative so people have to do very little tailoring. I mean, they have very small parts that they have to add, but the reports at the end stand alone for the hospitals and the health departments. So it's trying to meet everybody's check boxes of what's required.
I'm going to follow on that question with the logic of, I don't know, in epidemiologic terms, I suppose it's aggregated versus stratified. I wonder how much people who are participating in this want to use the eventual list of prioritized conditions that is in that column that says regional versus people wanting to say, yeah, well, that's a regional problem, but my county is what's important.
That's a very good question and a major struggle. Did everyone hear that? Yes? Okay. All right.
Yep.
Sorry. So the reason why we have it set up this way is that hospitals don't function on county, or CCOs don't function on county versus regional, right? They're looking at their service area. So even that concept of county versus regional is not something that makes a lot of sense to our partners that are participating in this. However, because lots of our healthcare systems cross county lines, in fact, most of them do, they are interested in the regional priorities. They look at their county specifically, but in our experience the past 5 years, our healthcare systems tend to go with the more regional priorities because they cover more than just a singular county. Now, we have one hospital system that's just in Washington County, so they only use our assessment, but the other ones generally span. And of course, many of the healthcare systems and CCOs have their own priorities. So for example, Providence has a youth suicide initiative right now, and so they are going to tend to align and build off what they already have in their systems by using this as well. So it's a kind of a mixture of both, but we have both, so you can choose whichever one you want.
One more.
I just have thought, and this might open a huge bag of worms, but you just don't want to come there.
Oh, trust me, I've been there, I'm sure.
Go ahead.
So in thinking about any sort of mental disease based on morbidity or mortality, if you could do something similar with each of the indicators, looking at community concern and cost, and seeing how each of the indicators sort of change in level of importance based on adding in those other.
And we do that, actually. That's just one of the steps that they do after this, is they... That's a very sensitive issue, bringing cost into this, because some of these things, like suicide, are a little bit more challenging to put a cost on, and it feels a little weird versus an ER sort of where cost is built in, and it doesn't result necessarily in a death. But there is a final step of the hospital CCO and EPI data where there is a cost assigned, it is re-ranked, and then also the community input is also weighted into that. So we do that. I just didn't, since that's not directly the work of this work group, but we do that. Both of those are included down the line.
All right.
Thank you.